by William E. Channing, October 24, 1867. After a long separation, how are we to recognize our friends in the spirit land? The body we have seen and known, but not the soul. Answer. Surely you are not to recognize them by their outward characteristics alone. It is not alone by form that you are to know those who have gone on before you, when you shall meet them in the land of the hereafter. But there is a certain power by which the soul can recognize those with whom it has been familiar. It matters not whether ages have passed between them since they have met in the external or not. There is no such thing as forgetfulness for the soul. Memory is eternal. It is an attribute of the soul, and therefore is eternal. You need not fear that you will not be recognized by your friends, or that you will fail to recognize them, for by that law that binds you together as friends, you cannot fail to recognize them. The law is ever active, and all may make use of it whenever they desire so to do. Question. Are the surroundings and influences for good and evil the same in the spirit land as in earth life? If so, what do we gain by the change? Answer. They are proportionately the same, but you are just one step, and one only, in advance of the earth life. Question. Is the night and day there? In other words, are light and darkness the same there, as here? Answer. There is what is equivalent to night and day. Light and darkness, but it is not the same as you have here. That you have here is adapted to your earthly needs, that we have is adapted to spiritual needs. If there are no more questions, we will proceed to answer in brief a question which we have received from an individual who is radically opposed, as he informs us, to King Alcohol. And because he is, he asks that those spirits who declare that they have power, or can exert power over the conditions of time, will return exercising their power towards the destruction of King Alcohol. He says, "I am told that the law of chemistry is well understood in the spirit world. Now if it is, cannot the spirits, by taking advantage of the law, destroy King Alcohol? Drive him out of the domain of nature, so that there shall be no more tears shed on his account? So that much of the misery that now fills the earth may disappear? Well, allowing that any class of disembodied spirits had the power to change the conditions by which you mortals are surrounded, allowing that they are permitted to exercise their power upon you, would it be well for them to carry out the wishes of him who has called upon us? Would it be well to even seek to drive King Alcohol out of the domain of nature? We argue it would not be well. Let us briefly consider from what King Alcohol has come. Let us analyze him. Scientific men inform us that he has been born of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. These are the causes that have produced him. They are in existence everywhere. There is no place devoid of them. Life would cease to be life without them. Rob the vegetable kingdom of them, and it becomes extinct. And the same is true of every other department in nature. Now, since it is always well to strike at the cause of every so-called evil effect, if we expect to destroy effectually the effect, we must begin at the cause. Now supposing for a moment we had the power to drive these elements out of nature, what would be the result? Why, destruction, certainly. Nothing short of it. It would be as possible to destroy the universe, to blot it out of existence, as to blot out the essential cause of King Alcohol. It cannot be done. God himself cannot do it, and at the same time sustain his laws. We are not arguing in favor of alcohol. We argue against its abuse. But its uses are many, too many for us to attempt to enumerate them here. Now, would it be wise for us to seek to destroy even this effect of these great principles in nature, since it can be put to so many good and proper uses? Would it be wise to seek to destroy it because, forsooth, one half of creation sees fit to abuse it? No, it would not. Rather seek to enlighten men and women. Rather seek to bring them upon a higher level, and then they will use and not abuse it. First, begin back, away back. Turn the leaves over, leaf by leaf, And you will perceive that 9/10 of all those people who bow down as servants to King Alcohol, are absolutely forced into that condition by antenatal forces over which they have no control. Seek, then, to regulate your affairs in this direction. Seek to bring men up beyond the abuse of it, and beyond the abuse of everything God has given you. Use all, but abuse none, remembering that the great All-Father has given you all these things by which you are surrounded, and alcohol is no exception, for your good. Instead of seeking to destroy these evils, evils you call them, seek to get yourselves a plane beyond them, so that you can rule them, and they cannot rule you. Bring the nations up to a standard beyond the abuse of anything God has given, and then all these evils will cease, and earth will become indeed a heaven. By Lewis Howard, October 28, 1867. Question. Has our late war so far settled the disturbing element of slavery and its party entanglements and entailments, North and South, that we may avoid another conflict? And, furthermore, does the Negro possess the characteristics that will enable him to live successfully and happily with the white at the South, or would it not be better for him to remove to some other country and live by himself, and this without derogating from his rights, which we see God has determined he shall have? Answer. The dark scenes of war through which this nation has but just passed are still fresh in your minds, and every scene is peculiar to itself and possesses its own life. Every son and daughter claiming a home on this American continent, that has come to years of understanding, need not be told that there is still a spirit of discord alive. The hoarse mouth of the cannon and the sharp edge of the sword have failed to destroy it. It lives still, and has its own law outside the law of active life. Therefore, if it is in action, you may know that it will culminate in some peculiar form or other, at some time or other, it may be in the far distant future, and it may be very near at hand. I believe that the present scene of strife, it is present, for it is with you even now, will be followed by one upon a mental plane. It may be called a mental war. And, as the pen is said to be more terrible than the sword, so thought is more terrible than deed, though you may not so understand it, and I believe that war that is to come will do more towards liberating the slaves upon this continent than that through which you have just passed. The physical war has brought the North to a better understanding with the South, and vice versa. And, therefore, it has conditioned both so that this mental war, when it shall be opened, will result in good. The North will say to the South, "You have a right to expect this much of me," and the South will say to the North, "You have a right to expect this much of me." The Negro claims his home here, and he has the right so to do. The soil is as much his as yours, and should you attempt to remove him, it matters not whether your motive be good or bad, you will find that the policy will not work as well with him as it has worked with the red man. He knows you too well, and, knowing you, will exercise his God-given power in consonance with his knowledge. He will not be driven from hence without warfare. He knows his rights, and will fight for them, and the great army of freedmen who have gone yonder will fight for him too. The lesson that the great All-Father has sought to impress upon your minds, namely, the right of freedom for all, and justice, as it means with God, you have failed to learn. Notwithstanding your homes have been desolated, and your hearts have been wrung by the loss of near and dear friends, still your lesson is not half learned. Now that the Negro is in part a freedman, now that you cannot buy or sell him bodily, you determine, many of you, to do so mentally and socially. Now that it has been determined that he has a right to his freedom, many of you determined that he must exercise that right in some foreign land. But, I tell you, inasmuch as he knows his rights, he will fight for them. The last few years have educated him in warfare, and, if need be, he will throw his knowledge into the scale against your injustice, and who, think you, will come off victorious? The voice of God has been sounding for years over your land, "Let my people go." but you have held them in body, and when you can do so no longer, you desire that they shall depart out of your coast. No, no, it cannot be. It never will be. Question. Is the doctrine of pre-existence, or the idea that man always existed as a conscious individual being, true? Answer. I believe it is true. If I doubted that I had existed as a conscious, individualized intelligence throughout all past eternity, I should have no hope for the future. Question. Does the controlling influence have any knowledge of a life previous to that which he experienced while in the body here? Answer. Absolute, perfect, and clear. Question. Does not the theory of progression believed in by spiritualists, and so often found in communications from spirits, carry with it, as a natural sequence, the idea of a starting point or a beginning? Answer. No, by no means. Because you live under a law of infinite progress, you are not to suppose that there was a time when you were beyond the limits of that law. No, I do not believe that the soul ever had any starting point. I believe it always has existed, else I could have no hope that it always would exist. By Arthur Fuller and G. Answer. Redman, October 29, 1867. Question. Can departed friends sever the silver cord that binds us to our material body, if the spirit inhabiting that body desires it, and the spirit friends are anxious or willing to grant that desire? We believe they can. Are we right or wrong? Answer. You certainly are right in your belief, for if the spirit was possessed of that power while in the body, it certainly is possessed of it after leaving the body. Question. In the banner of the 22d of September, 1866, the controlling spirit, in answer to certain questions, uses the following language. This is a truth, a great and mighty truth, that you are all changing places. That you die, is proof of it, that you live again beyond the tomb, is another proof of it, that as ages shall again roll on you will again inhabit human forms, is still further proof of it. Does the controlling spirit mean that spirits, after being separated from their earthly tenement, will again occupy a human body as they did before the dissolution? And if so, will those bodies be subject to decay as were the former ones? The above message of the intelligence is not clear, and a little explanation and further information is solicited. Answer. The theory of the resurrectionists is by no means without foundation. But they have arrived at a wrong conclusion. One of our most able speakers once said that the air was full of truth, and whoso was most susceptible would receive it first. Now these resurrectionists have perceived the truth and grasped it, but they have applied it in the wrong place. They believe that the spirit is to return after the lapse of years and inhabit this old body again, living on a new earth and under new circumstances, but having the old body. Well, that the spirit will return to earth again and become reincarnated in a human body, there is much evidence. Indeed, all that we have been able to gain is very largely in its favor. But our experience does not determine that we shall come again and inhabit the old bodies that we have lain off. The soul, the thinking, the intellectual part of man, finds expression alone through organized form, and if it expresses itself upon earth, it must express itself according to the laws of earth, and as the human form is the highest in existence, and the form through which the soul can best express itself, we believe that the souls of those who have gone beyond this world of man, full of shadows and sunbeams, will return again at some far-off future period, to live again through human life, and that human life, we believe, will be in a different condition from the life of today, yet it will be organized, life in human form. The ancients, who believed in this theory to a certain extent, had more correct ideas than the world has today. We do not wonder that many souls in contemplation of this theory shudder at it, since they have, many of them, tasted very largely of the sorrows of time, but if they would pause and consider that they are in the hands of an infinite law that will guide them whithersoever it will, whether they will or no, they would cease to mourn, methinks, over what is best for them, over what all their mourning will not change. All life, we are told, moves on by distinct degrees, and it moves in cycles. It is rounded into being by passing through the various experiences of human and intellectual life. If this be true, have we any guarantee against returning again to Earth? Able minds contend that we have none, and your speaker himself believes that there is much soundness in the theory. This was page 73. By Professor Edgar C. Dayton, October 31, 1867. Tribute to John Ansar. Andrew. We are told that Massachusetts this day mourns the loss of a favorite son, an honored child. Though a sister state claims him by right of birth, yet Massachusetts claims him by right of love and public duties. But is he lost? Will no echo answer the question? Is the power that prompted him to kindly deeds and kindly words forever silenced in death? Will he linger no longer in the midst of the family circle? Will he bless no longer the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? Is he dead? These are questions that Massachusetts should answer. The spirit of the age can answer them to the entire satisfaction of Massachusetts whenever she shall call upon her for an answer. Are all those leading minds that made glorious the page of her history dead? Those who have passed beyond mortal state, those whose forms you have mourned over, those whose voices you hear no longer, are they lost? If they are, then Massachusetts is poor indeed. But thanks be to the overruling power and the great spirit of infinite love, they are not lost, nor are they removed to some far-off clime, to some distant star, to pursue a course of action entirely different from that they pursued while here. No, the power of love, though earthly, is infinite and grand. Death cannot touch it. Change has no power over it. It outlives all change. It bids defiance to death. The great Father of life has been pleased to crown it with his own being, and seal it with his own seal. It cannot die. Even while we are speaking, the honored dead, or he who is dead to you, even while we are speaking, his happy spirit, happy in the consciousness of having done right so far as he understood it when here, is being welcomed to the land where the soul understands itself far better than amid the clogs of mortality. Every soul desires to hear those sublime and cheering words, "Well done, good and faithful servant, thou least been faithful over a few things, now I will make thee ruler over many." And the spirit of these words is being shed this hour upon him who has just left you. And he knows that his earthly labor is not done. Though the golden bowl is broken at the fountain, though the silver cord is loosed, yet life remains the same. And all those sublime traits of character that go to make up an honest man still live, and will be called into action in the world of mind whither it has flown. Massachusetts, who could afford to execute those persons who fain would have brought tidings from the great hereafter many years ago, should afford today to answer the question concerning her dead. Are they lost? Or are they found in the summer land of action? Have they been removed to satisfy vindictive vengeance? No. All nature answers no. But in strict accordance with the great immutable law of universal life, they have changed states, have laid off the mortal, and are now standing up in the dignity and royalty of immortality. Will they weep over your sorrows and mistakes? A, they will. Will they rejoice over your honest victories? Over your best endeavors? A, they will. Will they enter with all their soul power into the high and holy objects which absorbed their mortal lives? They will. Will they be satisfied with the enjoyment of a far-off heaven? No, they cannot. For the attracting power earthward is too strong, and earth has still longer need of them. And because she does need them, here they will remain, working for the enfranchisement of humanity everywhere. Praying to the great God of universal mind that you may speedily be free from the shadows that close around you, as nations and as individuals. When the shadow of the wing of the angel of death falls across the way of human hearts, then it is, if ever, that those hearts are turned away from the scenes of earth, turned away, far, far beyond these material scenes, to those that are more real and more sublime, to those that belong to the spirit. Then out of the shadow the crushed heart lifts its prayer to the great God of all, asking to know where are the loved ones who have been removed from our sight? We see the cold, silent form before us, but where is the spark that made glad its being? Where is that recognized and answered to our love? In answer to such prayers as these, modern spiritualism has come. She has flung back the shadows, and has invited every soul to come straightway to the throne of Almighty Truth, that to receive whatever may be necessary for their unfoldment. Spiritualism leads you to a recognition of the life after death. It shows you something more than the shadow of death. It shows you the sunbeam beyond. It tells you where your loved ones have found their home. It answers all their questions with regard to life after death. Oh, then, ye who mourn the loss of loved ones, turn to this modern and ancient angel combined in one, asking for light. And Massachusetts, you whose love is for greater than your injustice, turn by the torch of that love the leaves of life's book, and as you turn them, you will read the answer to the question, where are our honored dead? Question. Will parents and children who are unavoidably separated long years upon the earth, be united in that relation in the spirit world? Or will the children outgrow all recollection of, and affection for, their parents, and not know they ever belonged to them? Answer. The attraction or law that binds soul to soul is not in any way dependent upon the body or its experience. If a parent and child are bound together by a spiritual law of attraction, there is nothing that can sever it, no power that can separate them, and they as naturally gravitate together as all apple will fall to the ground if some interposing power does not break its fall. The law of spiritual affinity is supposed by many to be dependent, to a certain extent, upon human conditions, human experience. But it is not so. It stands above and apart from human life. There are many parents who have no spiritual love for their children, and vice versa. Such cannot hope to enjoy each other's society in the spirit land, nor will they wish to. Question. Is the theory of the spirit's home, or zones of spirit land, as described by Hudson Tuttle in his Arcana of Nature, correct in its main features? If so, what becomes of them in the far distant future, when this earth shall have grown old and passed away, as an earth, as I understand it will, by almost all writers on the harmonial philosophy? Answer. Everything, spirit as well as matter, is subject to the law of progress. Everything is constantly passing through an unending series of changes, therefore if the spirit land is a distinct locality, as many writers affirm, you are to believe, if it holds connection with the earth, that as the earth passes out of its material orbit into a spiritual orbit, the spirit land or zone will change to correspond to the earth. But your speaker does not believe that the spirit land is confined to any particular locality. The brief experience that has been his in the spirit land has taught him that the spirit world is everywhere, on the earth, under the earth, above the earth, wherever there is life, there is the spirit land. By Professor John Hubbard, November 4, 1867. Question. If it is true that the soul has had a previous existence in some other form before its connection with the body, why is it that it has no distinctive recollection of that existence? Answer. The soul existed in embryo before it was projected into the external world, before it was made apparent as an individual according to the laws of time. And yet the soul, through its human organism, has no memory of that prior existence. It can remember back to the days of childhood, but it can go no farther. There seems to be a power governing the attribute of memory that is, to a very great extent, dependent upon form and the conditions of form. Memory expresses itself through form. It turns to the past through form, and it stretches its clairvoyant vision from the past to the future through form. It is dependent upon the laws of form to a very great extent. Therefore it is that you do not remember having had a prior existence to the one which is now your own, so-called, as an individual. I have no recollection of an existence prior to the existence of my earthly life, yet I have listened to many who declared that they have a distinct recollection of scenes far, far back in their past, dating long before their earth lives. Question. Memory is eternal, and the soul's remembrance of such a state of life before the present would be as indelibly impressed on the future of its existence as its connection with the body is. Answer. That part of the subject has been answered, we think. A memory is, indeed, eternal, and, as we before remarked, it is dependent for expression upon form, and for its peculiar mode of expression it is dependent upon form. What is memory to one individual is not exactly memory to another. The attribute of memory differs according to the characteristics of the form through which it is expressed. Question. Some people believe in the transmigration of souls. Do we take some other form, and so go on in a constant round of progression? Does the soul enter other bodies, sometimes better and sometimes worse than its own? Answer. In one sense it does enter other bodies, and acts through other bodies than the human, and, in another sense, it does not. For instance, the mechanic may, to all intents and purposes, act through his mechanical skill, and express his life in some outward form, a table, it may be, a chair, a dwelling place. Who shall determine that the life of the mechanic is not there? Certainly no one can. The soul expresses itself, I believe, through all that is beneath it. Everything becomes a medium for the soul. The granite rocks are the soul's mediums, the skies, the air, the water, the flowers, the beasts, the birds, the fishes, everything that is beneath the soul becomes the agent of the soul, and so far as the soul is able to find expression through these forms, or by the agency of these forms, so far it becomes incorporated in the form allied to it. The ancients grappled with a very great truth in their theory of the transmigration of souls. They intuitively perceived the power of the soul over all matter, and, perceiving its power, they very naturally were led to conclude that it would use the power, and, therefore, become incarnated in other forms than the human. By Thomas Paine, November 5, 1867. Question. If spirits do, as they say, visit other planets, I would ask if they are inhabited? And if so, do you learn anything of them, of their history, character, and condition, as compared with the inhabitants of the Earth? Answer. Very many of the planets are inhabited by animal and intellectual life, while very many of them are not inhabited, they not having arrived at the stage where they can sustain animal and intellectual life combined. It is impossible to visit any such locality and not learn something in consequence of the visit. We find that all the planets that we have been made in any degree conversant with, possess essentially, and to a great extent objectively, the same life as the Earth. The atoms are aggregated differently, to be sure, but the essence of the atoms is precisely the same, and the same general law seems to govern them. The products of those planets that seem to be unfolded in nearly the same plane of the Earth, are nearly the same as those of the Earth. There is, to be sure, a difference, but it is in the external more than the internal. The great power that governs this Earth governs all other planets, and they all are subservient to this law, therefore the method of unfoldment must be similar. By Theodore Parker, November 7, 1867. Question. Why is it that spiritualists speak so disrespectfully of religion, and so malignantly towards anyone that has done any harm, if he belonged to a church? Does belonging to a church make the person any worse? This was at page 80. Answer. There are many persons who claim to be spiritualists who are only such in outward expression, while the inward life of spiritualism they know nothing about. Spiritualism teaches large charity, and it also teaches you to be just. It does not teach you to array the peculiar condition of any individual before the world, that the world may censure and finally condemn. No, spiritualism does no such thing. Spiritualism points you to yourself, and bids you to be exceedingly watchful over yourself, guarding your every act, and rendering all acceptable to even the highest angels in the sphere beyond time.